The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Before beginning our program, we would like to invite you to sign up for a free trial subscription to one of our publications at irei.com. Whether you are interested in real estate, infrastructure, or real assets in general, IREI has a publication to suit your needs. Select Publications on the main menu to choose a publication. Interested in more than one? Sign up for them all.
This is Mike Consul, and our guest is Prakash Kalothia. He is CEO and Managing Director of Lapis India Capital, based in Mumbai. He is also the author of the Market Perspective column, appearing in the March 2018 edition of Institutional Real Estate Asia Pacific. The headline on that article reads, "Unfulfilled Demand, Lessons from India's Past Decade, and Opportunities for the Next." He joins us by phone from Mumbai. Prakash Kalothia, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Mike. Good to be here.
You write in the column that there have been some key changes in the real estate market that affect the situation in India. Talk a little bit about the changes that are of interest and value to investors.
Mike, I'm referring to two changes. The Real Estate Regulation Act, or RERA, as it is locally called, and Goods and Services Tax, or GST. Let me first talk about RERA. India has a very strong demand, okay, for homes, and Indian developers were able to sell homes off the plans, okay, before obtaining approvals and commencing construction. And an average home buyer in India pays up 10 to 30% of deposit and agrees to pay a contractual milestone-linked payment to the developer. As a result, what happens in India is, by the time the frame is completed, a buyer puts up 90 to 95% of the total price, whereas a developer has incurred only 50% of construction costs. And given this structure, developers had little incentive to complete the project. As a result of this, the home deliveries in India got delayed. And an average home buyer had very little recourse to a mighty developer. Recently, Real Estate Regulation Act has been introduced. What it does is it protects the interests of an average home buyer. All the information of the project are available on a website. A builder under this law is required to put up all the critical information of a development on the website, and all the monies which are collected from the customer are put up in an escrow account. And from this escrow account, they could only use up money for the construction of the project. Given this development, I'm quite hopeful that now home deliveries can happen on time, and as a result, the trust deficit which was there between a developer and a home buyer, okay, would get reduced. The second point is goods and services tax. India, as you know, has 29 states and 7 union territories. It was not united. It was not a one tax market. Given GST, now it's a unified tax market. So an entrepreneur working in different states in India doesn't have to follow different tax structures and doesn't have to deal with different tax authorities. They could have one unified tax structure. And I think this would significantly reduce the cost of doing business and the logistics cost. And in my view, RERA and GST are significant reforms which have taken place, and it would make the market more transparent and business-friendly.
Now, infrastructure is really pretty critical to real estate, Prakash. And India has struggled with poor infrastructure over the years. Given the importance of infrastructure to real estate development, does India have the required infrastructure to optimize a real estate investor's opportunity for success?
Mike, India has a lot of work to do in the infrastructure space. But Indian politicians across the spectrum fully understand the need to upgrade and further build infrastructure. There has been a substantial step up of investment in infrastructure, mostly in transportation, housing, sanitation, and urban infrastructure sector in the recent past. For example, let me give you a few data points. Let me take roads. India, over the last 15, 20 years, has built significant road infrastructure. If you take metro rail system, metro rail is essentially the rail-based mass transit system, which is popularly called as metro in India. Indian government has been building the metro system across India after the success of Delhi Metro. And currently, the metro rail network is being built in a number of cities like Delhi, Noida, Gurgaon, Kolkata, Mumbai, Chennai, Bangalore, and a number of other cities. If you look at civil aviation, India is a very large market as far as domestic civil aviation is concerned. There are 18 greenfield airports which are under construction, including the second airport in Mumbai. If you look at telecom, India has made a remarkable progress in the telecom space. Nearly every Indian has a mobile phone today. I can give you a lot more data points, but in some way I would say that there is a big infrastructure push which is underway in India today.
Okay, so let's also talk about, my understanding is that India now has legislation to allow for real estate investment trusts, which have been very popular in the United States and some other countries for quite a while now. But I'm curious, are you happy with the current framework? And when do you think, do you have any timeline for when you think the first REIT will actually be listed?
So it took India some time to come to an acceptable REIT regulation. The work started in 2007. In 2014, Indian government finally notified the final regulations of REIT. After the REIT regulations were notified, the tax structure, the taxation structure, had to be in harmony with this new piece of legislation. And it took some time, and only, I believe, in the end of 16 or beginning of 17, that the tax laws in India were in harmony with the new piece of the REIT legislation. Once the tax structure was completely in line with the new legislation, and various developers and office landlords started to think about creating a REIT listing, they started to face other smaller issues. I'll give you an example. A REIT, for example, is required to own at least 51% in a property or in an SPV. In some situations, office owners were in joint venture with the landowners, and those structures were 50-50. And there was no place for 50-50 structure in a REIT listing. And therefore, the government had to make some more amendments to make sure that some of these issues were taken care of. My sense is now all the little issues have been taken care of. I do believe that the current framework is favorable and effective. I believe it has inputs of all stakeholders. And in my opinion, I tend to think that over the next 12 months, hopefully there should be a listing. And if that happens, or when that happens, my sense is another 3 to 4 large office landlords who've been working towards it would go for a listing. I think the key question today is not whether the framework is good or not. I think it's a commercial question, which is how these things should be priced. If you look at the yield on a 10-year Indian government paper, it is around 7.5% today. And then the key question is, what should be the yield in an office portfolio to attract investors? I think pricing is the key issue. And if you were to ask me for the growth of the REIT space in India, first few offerings need to have a very strong combination of good sponsors, good quality, well-located real estate assets at a reasonable valuation. And I'm hopeful that the REIT market will slowly develop in India.
So what property types, whether it's a REIT or private equity, or some real estate fund of any stripe, what property types do you think are most opportune at this time in Mumbai and India at large?
Mike, India is an underbuilt and capital-starved market. Okay, and what that says is that there are opportunities across property types. I've always said that the key issues that an investor should focus on are the experience, skill set, and the maturity of the local team. I think that's critical, that what's the skill set, the quality of local team, which is investing money or developing these projects. And what is the time frame to seek an exit? So because India is largely a development market. So for example, if you look at 1 or 2 million square foot for sale residential, that could fit into a 5 to 7 year business plan. Whereas if you look at a large retail development, which is greenfield, where you've got to go from land assembly to building plan approvals to doing the construction, leasing, and then stabilizing the project, it's very difficult to fit that into a 7 to 8 year limited life fund. And therefore, you need different formats of capital to capture different property types. From our viewpoint, point, we are excited about for sale affordable middle-class housing and acquisition and development of truly grade A multi-tenanted office-led developments. I should also quickly talk about warehousing because I see a lot of excitement in the Western world about warehousing. India, there is a great warehousing opportunity in India, especially given the fact that GST has been enacted. It's a long-term opportunity, and I think it's an opportunity for people who are experienced, who've got strong tenant relationships, and people who've got a fully integrated, a full-stack real estate business, okay, where they could do land assembly, they could do construction, they could do leasing, and they have deep pockets in terms of patience of that capital. As far as middle-class housing is concerned, I'm obviously very excited about it because it's a long-term opportunity, and this opportunity is here to exist, given very favorable demographics. There's a fair amount of government support. Government is supporting both the home buyers and also encouraging mortgage companies to lend more to an average home buyer. And an average home buyer also gets a fair amount of support, both direct financial help as well as indirect financial help in terms of subsidies and taxation. So middle-class housing is something that I'm hugely excited about. And RERA improves the transparency, makes sure that weaker players are not around and stronger players do deliveries on time. As far as offices are concerned, in the last 10 years, India has seen development of a lot of suburban business parks. I'm more excited about city-centric, grade A, multi-tenanted office-led developments. Historically, India has not had a unified ownership of buildings in central business districts because these buildings were sold strata, and that has resulted in low maintenance, okay, and the quality of buildings declining fairly quickly. So I'm excited about both affordable middle-class housing as well as acquiring and building quality offices across India.
So let's talk geography just a little bit, because India is an enormous country. Is Mumbai the place to be, or are there some other cities in India that are especially attractive at this stage?
So Mike, India is a very large country, second most populous, with nearly 1.3 billion people. There are 53 urban clusters in India with a population of 1 million or more as per the last census. Mumbai, Delhi, Kolkata are obviously big cities. They have over 10 million people. When we look at the market, I think eight cities that include Mumbai, Delhi, and when I say Delhi, it includes Gurgaon and Noida, which are the two suburban areas which are seeing massive amounts of urbanization. Bangalore, Pune, Chennai, Hyderabad, Kolkata and Ahmedabad. These eight cities are seeing massive urbanization because new jobs are getting created in these cities, both in the services as well as manufacturing sectors. As far as Lapis India's capital is concerned, we are more focused on the top three, Delhi, Bombay and Bangalore. We believe that there's a lot more job creation in these markets. The infrastructure in these three cities is attracting a lot of investment, and we continue to remain focused on these top three markets of Delhi, Mumbai and Bangalore.
So let's talk about what the ingredients are for successful real estate investment in India. Because when money's coming from overseas, a lot of times a foreign country of any kind can seem pretty exotic to an investor. So if somebody's putting their money into real estate investing or thinking about doing that in India, what points would you make just in terms of what needs to happen to optimize their chance of success?
My view, it boils down to good partner, good local partners, and good quality real estate. I think if you've got a good combination of quality local partners and quality real estate, okay, you would have a successful outcome. Execution, things take normally longer than expected in India, but execution has been improving. Even then, I would say that one needs to get involved with a reasonable size project. If you look at the 05, 08 vintage, people got involved with very large townships and special economic zones. But if you get involved with a reasonable size project, which is, you know, about a million square foot here and there, with good quality people at infill location, okay, you should have a good outcome. In addition to that, I would say that you need control over bank accounts, you need voting rights over important partnership decisions, and you need very careful and practical exit options. A lot of people, a lot of contracts were written by New York lawyers and lawyers based offshore, and they did not take into account the Indian laws, okay, and what was the practice locally. So I think you need enforceable contracts. So combination of these, okay, would result into a successful outcome.
What about investors who are concerned about currency risk? What would you advise them just in terms of risk associated with the different currencies between nations, and obviously specifically the rupee in India?
So currency, in our experience, has been a significant value destroyer. We have a 05-08 vintage, and if you look at Indian rupee, it saw a significant depreciation in 2009, 2011, and 13. Since 13, Indian rupee has been largely stable, given the fact that we have a stable government, given the fact that our macroeconomic parameters have been improving. Also, there have been a huge amount of foreign exchange inflows. The current reserves with Reserve Bank of India, which is the central bank in India, is over $400 billion. Having said that, we would continue to have the inflation and interest rate differential between India and the US, and in our view, as a result of that, rupee is likely to depreciate. The current view that we've taken is that if we get involved with a 4 to 6 year business plan, we would allow 3% annual depreciation of the currency, and that is something that we would allow in our business plan. Because the hedging markets are not deep, they're expensive, and they're not viable, and we've taken a decision that we should allow a 3% natural depreciation of Indian rupee over time, okay, in our business plans.
So given everything we've talked about, are you seeing increased capital flows into Indian real estate or just a higher interest level? What's the current status in terms of foreign interest level and capital flows into Indian real estate, Prakash?
So let's look back. India, till 2005, was not open for foreign capital in the real estate space. And India opened up in 2005. And given the opening up and given where the global economy was pre the global financial crisis, there was a massive inflow of capital in 2005-08 into Indian property market. Now, most of that money has not earned a decent risk reward. And as a result, investors turned very negative about prospects in this market. However, if you look at the past few years, you see a number of institutional investors planting flags in Indian market. So my sense is institutional investor interest is picking up in India. Obviously, India is a large country, given its population, given its demographics, and I don't think foreign investors want to ignore India. If you look at the GDP growth over the past 3 years, it has been 7.5%. We have a stable government. Prime Minister Modi is reform-minded. Real Estate Regulation Act that I talked about, Unified Goods and Services Tax that I talked about, they have been successfully implemented. And there's a fair amount of opportunity across property types and across India. We talked briefly about the REIT market. The REIT market will also provide greater institutional liquidity. So it's clear in my head that institutional investor interest is beginning to pick up, and I see more investors coming to India over time. Now, what has happened over the last few years is that you are seeing joint ventures and managed accounts by large sovereigns or large investors. The traditional commingled funds have not got raised in India after the first wave of 2005 and 2008, but my sense is the commingled interest should be returning back to India. I feel quite confident that given the good economic fundamentals, given a stable government, and given all the changes which have been made in the Indian market, I'm quite excited about the prospect and attractiveness of this market in the long term.
Our guest has been Prakash Kalothia. He is CEO and Managing Director of Lapis India Capital. And he joined us by phone in Mumbai. Prakash, thank you for taking the time.
Thank you, Mike.